You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm going to apologize in advance. I kind of messed up the beginning. It's because I'm having some tech issues. I'm on a different machine. I got all kinds of issues at the house. I know. So I'm going to apologize in advance if anything. I already messed up by showing our images at the beginning. That's not supposed to happen. But the worst problem is that my Roku is not working. And so I can't stream anything. All I have is regular cable. And so I'm stuck. I know. I can't, like, usually at the end of the night, I'll like stream something like The Office or something stupid that I can be brain dead and watch. But like, I'm stuck watching like sports, like that I don't care about, and like movies on demand, and like, you know, regular cable, old days, you know what I mean?
So like your inner like 14-year-old is just totally busted by this. Like, can't you stream something on your phone? Because then you can just eliminate the whole process.
I could, but the phone is just like, it's this.
See, so it's, that's right. So that's because we're old and we the fact that these idiots will sit here and watch like, you know, Shogun or something that's like an incredible thing that took hundreds of million dollars to shoot properly on like a 3-inch screen. Like, I can't understand it. That's my probably my biggest old man take at this point.
I'm not doing that old. I am watching some older, like, you know, Back to My Kids Day stuff, though. 80s, 90s. I watched Back to the Future last night.
Well, I mean, that's an eminently rewatchable movie. I mean,
yeah. It's like,
it's just, I couldn't watch that on a tiny screen. Like, that would just drive me insane. Like, what are you even doing? It's like, well, watching Stick Figures or something.
I know. I started watching True Lies. Remember True Lies?
Ah, an excellent 90s action film. That's a great one to pull up completely randomly with no relevance to any other topic of discussion.
And I fell asleep before the scene.
The scene?
Yeah.
Jeff knows about the scene.
That was a big scene of my youth right there.
Jamie Lee Curtis is like...
I was saying to you guys,
70 now, but
we won't bore them much longer with this stuff. But like Jamie Lee Curtis in that movie, wow! And then like I swear, 2 months later, she was a grandma doing commercials talking about how yogurt makes her regular. Like that's not sexy. We don't want to know about that.
Yeah, that's not.
Why is your hair all gray? what happened? She's like Matt Ryan. She had a Matt Ryan. Career arc. Anyways, that
Wes is like, wait, I thought we were doing a spring football recap. What's going on? Yeah.
You can just mute until we're ready for you.
Wes, spring ball. Are they going to be good this year? Next year, this fall, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where everyone has so many questions, but I mean, I don't think the questions are necessarily as big as anticipated. You know, they know a lot of the ways to fill the holes. It's just a matter of the guys stepping up and making the plays.
They have a lot of holes to fill, though, right? Still.
I mean it's one of those things where they have a bunch of players who have been waiting for these moments, you know, especially, you know, the quarterback position, you know, even bringing in MJ Morris, you know, ton of wide receivers, you know, some running backs that are ready to get some touches. So it's just a matter of how these guys step into their new roles.
Yeah, it's really the offensive line for me. I just feel like when you've got to replace so many guys, basically the entire starting five, you know, you've got Long back who started a couple games. You got Roy who threw in a couple at the end of the season. So, like, there's a little bit of experience there. But it feels like, you know, as we're at this point, what, 4.5 hours from the end of the transfer portal, you know, they still have some holes to fill, especially on the tackles. And I'm not sure what A is available and where they've really got even any scholarships to work with.
Scholarships are limited and there's not much in the portal and everybody needs offensive linemen. So basically they have to possibly do what they've done last year. You know, they got Gali Baidze and Corey Bullock, both who turned out, you know, who were pretty solid from lower levels of football this year. They did it with the kid Alan Heron, who they flipped from Penn State. He was at something called Shorter University in Georgia. And maybe you find another guy like that or two even, because that offensive line is it's been a concern lately in recent years, but it seems like a bigger one to me, at least going in this year.
Speaking of the 4.5 hours until the deadline, Jeff just looked down at his phone while you were saying that, Paul, and I was like, uh-oh, who is it? Who is it? Because he had a look of consternation on his face.
Like, well, I mean, for anyone listening to the recording of this, it's recording from 7:30 to 8:30 Wednesday night, and there still has not been a single outgoing transfer announced at Maryland, which usually right now, you know, right after spring ball, you got, you know, some guys, whether it's 5 or 10 or whatever guys who realize that they're probably not going to be getting much of an opportunity. You see them start popping up one after another. There still hasn't been a single one, which is very unusual. I actually asked somebody over there about that. His take was that, hey, the culture is really good now. They're winning. People are happy. You know, the program's got stability. Coaches have stuck around. And then also the calculus is different for a lot of players now who they know, like, if I go to a lower level, I'm not going to get, like, even if you're not getting NIL money or big NIL money, there's still this cost of living check they get every month. I don't know what it is, like $4,000 or $5,000, something like that. They know they're not getting that if they go to a lower level. So the math has kind of changed, but I would still, I can't imagine you won't have at least a few guys leave.
Well, you kind of, we've talked about this in basketball a little bit. They want to bring in all these guys in basketball. You need some attrition in order for that to happen. Same thing for football, right? Like, I don't want to say that there's some guys, like, you don't want guys to leave, like, they're Terps and you want to support them, but, like, you kind of need some of that, right, in order to get the players they want to get.
Business. I mean, it's business. And it's even more business now than it ever was before. Now these guys are getting compensated. So it's gotten a lot more cutthroat and calculating on both sides of the occasion. Players, you know, waiting till the last second to leave, maybe because they're waiting for the NIL from that month and then leaving the day after they get it. Coaches pushing guys out, which has always happened, but maybe a little more, a little less subtly than before, but nothing's gone down yet somehow.
Dion was not subtle. Dion just, remember when he came into Colorado and just flat out.
So he's Dion, though. He can get away with it,
I guess.
Give it after they have another losing season this year. We'll see.
I was gonna say, you ain't getting away with it if you keep putting up 4-8s or whatever every year. I mean, that's gonna get old fast, especially once his kids start rolling out.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. I mean, if you will look at the portal as a positive, which I still generally do. I think a lot of it for a lot of players, especially when you're talking about 85-man rosters, is you're just trying to find your level. I mean, if you're a redshirt sophomore and you're still stuck with the twos and the threes at Maryland, you're probably not good enough at this level. So maybe you take a look at a Charlotte or a G5 program that where you can go and maybe be a starter, at least be in the two deep. Yeah, the money's not going to be there, but you're not getting any money here either. So you know, there can be some positives to that, and the idea that Maryland ends up maybe sucking up some kid from an Alabama or a big school that couldn't quite cut, you know, pull that too deep. So there's good reasons to make these types of moves too. You know, I think it very often it gets kind of put in this like, oh, well, kids are just being selfish and don't stick to their commitments and things of that nature. But I do think there are certainly good reasons for kids to decide, hey, you know, maybe I want to take a look around. You know, I'm not sure that's a Corey Dyche's situation, you know, but it might be for some of these other guys who have been here for a couple years and just, you know, couldn't quite get on the field.
Well,
so
Wes,
I've got an idea of what they need, what I think they need in Portal. But Wes saw the guys up close and personal. Wes, how would you rank like the top three needs if you could get a few ready-made transfers?
Yeah, I think obviously offensive line, you just add another body to get in there. They already have so many, but you know, like they mentioned, they have, you know, the two assistant coaches now. They're willing to put the time in to develop these guys. So, you know, you might not be able to get a starter right out of the portal, but you can at least get a guy who can compete and fight for a spot and maybe push somebody to be better. I mean, you can always use some more defensive guys. Maybe the defensive line could use some depth so you can keep rotating them. And then maybe someone into the defensive backfield so you don't have to throw a guy like Braden Lee right into the fire right on day one. But yeah, there's the problem of a lot of guys who don't have the experience, don't have the shine that maybe a 4-year starter or 4-year bench player coming in could have. But you know, there is talent there that can play.
What about getting a receiver? Because it seems like after Prather and Felton should be two of the top 10 or 15 receivers in the Big Ten. Seems like no one's really established themselves after those two guys.
Yeah. Probably a depth receiver. I mean, you have so much at the tight end position, you know, so you're definitely going to run one, maybe two tight ends at times. Prather, Felton, Octavian Smith, you know, but then after that, you are looking at like, you know, Robert Smith, who's making some plays in the spring game again. So, yeah, I mean, you can always use some depth additions there.
Yeah, receiver weird.
Robert Smith's dad was the GM of the Texans. I met him randomly at the concession stand at the bowl game. Nicest guy in the world. I'm glad you said tight end, though, because that's the other – I know that they definitely want a tight end because the two guys they have are really talented and athletic, and but they're both like pass catchers basically, so they definitely need a veteran blocking tight end.
Well, don't they have Samansky kind of as the big – big, you know,
big lug,
hunk of love, blocker type. And, you know, that's not a need. That would be kind of more of a luxury, right? If you get a veteran to come in there with with the receivers, I think they just keep waiting for Octavian and for Shalik Knotts to take that next step. And they're just not doing it. And I guess Octavian's been hurt a bit during the spring, because I know he wasn't playing when I was there, and he's been kind of in and out, but like, that's really been a bit of a bummer for me, because I can't, you know, Knotts is an outside guy, but you can imagine Octavian Smith doing some really nasty stuff on the inside. But it just hasn't quite come together for him yet. And I don't know if it's more of an injury situation or something else. You know, Wislowski actually, you know, obviously can play a little bit. He's done been the main kick returner. He's certainly got some athleticism. I don't know if he's that guy you can put out there for 40 snaps at the slot. So yeah, there's definitely a depth issue there for me. Corner is still, you feel pretty good about Husky and Perry Fisher. After that, you're looking at a lot of really, really young guys. A couple of those young guys look good in the spring game and made some plays, but like, I'm not sure you want to roll into the Big Ten, you know, with, you know, even Perry Fisher, he's only guys got two starts under his belt. Right. So real depth concerns there, and obviously the tackles are a mess. I mean, that's, you know, you're still rolling Fagan out there with your ones as your right tackle. That's not going to do. And I'm kind of, you know, I don't understand the situation with Roy. I mean, if he's going to play, he's got to play, right? I mean, you can't just wait until he decides to be 320. You got to put him out there, and if he's a good enough football player, you can at least get away with it for a while, especially at right tackle, where you don't have to be a giant guy, especially with his frame. But, you know, I swear during the spring game, seeing Fagan get pushed back, you know, 5 yards every play they were trying to pass, that's just not going to work. So that's the really only big concern for me. Like, that feels like the offensive line this year feels like a situation where, just with the quarterbacks, if none of the quarterbacks works out and if none of the offensive tackles work out, you could be talking about a, you know, being two losses more than you would expect otherwise. Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah, with Roy, like, Maryland doesn't get many guys with that kind of offensive lineman with that kind of offer list. So when you do, he needs to be something for you by his third year. which this will be. Otherwise, that's, you know, that's a huge miss. I think, you know, they've got some depth guy. They like Isaac Bunyan, who was a defensive lineman last year, moved over to offensive line. They said he's got really long arms, super strong, but he's raw. The odds of converting a guy and having him be a capable Big Ten offensive lineman right off the bat are pretty slim. So it will be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the inside, at least, you've got the Purdue kid who seems like he's going to be an upgrade at center. And the guards, you've at least got a bunch of guys you can throw out there. You know, Baal has said some good things about him. You know, Bunyan, obviously, they're not putting him in there for all those reps or they don't think they can get something out of him in the fall. You know, Long has started a number of games. Like, there's some dudes there, at least. Tackles, man, I just don't know. I mean, obviously, they like Heron a lot. But he's still a D2 kid who's popping in out of nowhere. So it's a little scary. I guess we might as well just roll that into the big question, Wes. What are your feelings about the quarterbacks and where we're at right now?
Yeah. I think it's interesting because you, like Loxley said, you know, he opened up spring camp saying, you know, it's a six-man job. I have no idea. You know, it's a six-man fight. I don't know who it is. But you pretty much are down to three guys. You have Billy, you have MJ Morris, who transferred in, and you have Cam Edge. Billy, obviously, you know, everyone knows, you know, who he is and what he brings. You know, he stepped in for Talia there at times. You know, he's, you know, got some question marks as a passer, but, you know, he can run. You know, he's got the toughness. You know, the guys love him, and he can be a leader. Then you have MJ Morris, who came in, and it seems like in the spring that, you know, he's just missing that connection with the guys. It seems like just a timing thing. You know, when Billy Edgeworth had so many years in the system, even if he is just watching from the sideline, playing some spot snaps, you know, that's experience that MJ Morris, you know, didn't have walking in February. So then you have, you know, Cam Edge, who's a good passer, but he was still a little off on some of his reads. And you're definitely going to just have to be more mobile in this kind of college football game we're in now. So it's going to be interesting to see how the two of those guys can push Billy Edwards. But I would definitely say if you had to start the season today, you would probably put Billy Edwards out there for the experience factor.
That's contrary to what a lot of the reports from spring game where most obviously MJ was the MVP and got most of the accolades and a lot of people predicting him now, but you're saying Billy, that seems not to jive with everybody else.
Yeah. Billy mentioned after that he wasn't even sure if he was going to play in the spring game because he got hurt in the scrimmage at Blue. But from at least from what I saw at Baloo, it really seemed like it's mostly between those two guys. If MJ can get familiar and get those connections with the guys, so I mean, Edge is kind of on the outside looking in, but he is someone who could make a run at it.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about the spring game specifically, when you take Billy's read option away from him, that really limits what he can do. I mean, nobody is expecting him to sit back there and throw the ball 50 times a game. If that's the case, Maryland might as well just pack up and go home. You know, so I'm not sure the spring game is a great objective look at where the competition is. But I will say what I saw of Morris in spring game was way better of what I saw of him in practice. And it does make you wonder whether it's just a situation with him where he's got the goods. It's really just about learning the offense, getting down that kind of timing with the receivers. And once he does, he's going to run away with this thing. But I agree with Wes from what I can tell and from what I'm hearing just from friends around the program, it does seem like it's more of a 2-horse race than a 3-horse race at this point, with maybe Billy a little bit ahead. Spring camp, you know, camp opens 3 months from now. They're going to get a lot of 7-on-7s in. They're going to get a lot of informal practice, a lot of stuff on the side. You know, I think by the time you get to that second week of August, I think Locks will have a pretty good idea as to at least the way he wants to start and kind of go from there. And I still think I'd be shocked if Billy didn't get the first shot at it, but certainly, you know, if he can't be accurate enough in the pocket when he has to make those throws, you know, you go with MJ, give him a shot. I don't feel like there's anything to lose there. And at least the way the schedule plays out, those first six games do give you a little bit of room to mess around and try and figure things out for as usual, you get into mid-October and November and it turns into a friggin' nightmare.
Not as bad a nightmare.
Not as bad. Just a regular nightmare, not like a Freddy Krueger, everybody in your family dies kind of nightmare like it normally is.
Yeah.
And honestly, you also kind of get to the point where, you know, Billy spent, you know, time in the system. He's still well liked by the guys. You know, he likes the program. It's one of those things where if the change does have to be made, it might not be as detrimental as some programs have seen, where you put one guy out there for the first game and then you end up saying, you know, maybe you're not the guy right now. You end up putting someone else in, but then his confidence is shot down and it's sort of a whole chain, or maybe you can't go back to him and all that kind of stuff. I don't think Maryland would see that with Edwards. So I agree. It's probably something where he probably gets the first nod. But I definitely think MJ with time can rise above that.
And if Billy doesn't win the job, if Morris wins it, make Edge the backup, put Billy in as a fullback and run the triple option, right? That guy was born to do stuff like that. Rugged dude, 6'4", 220, something like that. Loves running people over. Or a tight end, even.
Let's just wishbone it. Who cares, man? Let's get weird, right?
I mean, honestly, like this year, there's got to be some team that runs it so it's in the college football game.
Oh, man, only another 2 months. Me and my son are counting down the days for that one.
Do we have a release date for that yet? Because I already need to, because my kids have bogarted the original PS5, I've got to have a very scary argument with my wife about why we need a second PS5 just for me. So that's going to be fun.
July.
Okay, I got to work up to that. I got to do some nice stuff and, you know, make some good dinners and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think at some point this month there's going to be a trailer, and I think that probably will have the release date.
Okay.
Paul, start embezzling money, like $10 every, like, you know, pull money out of the bank, but then put $10 in a sock drawer and get yourself, you know.
Yeah, I just steal money from my kids or something. Like, they've, you know, my oldest one's got a job now, so he probably doesn't even count that stuff. He's not very smart.
Did Wes, you were there, right, at the spring game?
Yep.
I was not. I was down visiting my son, so I couldn't go. I wanted to go. What is it Maryland Day like, the whole thing?
Yeah, so, I mean, they have a bunch of stuff down. You know, people can tour the different academic buildings and all that kind of stuff. They'll have, you know, basically a huge fair on the mall. They had, like, the men's and women's basketball players signing some autographs. And, you know, there's always people walking around campus like crazy. A lot of people who came just for the football. I know some people mentioned on the board, but the parking was a bit of a mess if you tried to get there between 11 and 12 or a little after 12, because, you know, everyone's already been on campus for 4 or 5 hours going through stuff. But yeah, it's like basically just a huge fair for Maryland as a whole.
Do you think the crowd for the spring game was better or worse than usual?
It was definitely better than usual. You know, it's one of those ones where, based on the camera angle, they never put anyone on the other side of the stadium, so you don't really see it. But I took a picture from above, and it really wasn't, you know, it was definitely better than usual. I know, you know, Doan and some of the other guys who, you know, wrote some articles, you know, the recruits kind of noticed that, even if it's not, you know, 45,000-60,000 people fill in the stadium, it was definitely more, and it was definitely some key support.
Hey, Wes, so who are give me like three guys that you feel like broke out a little bit during the spring, just as guys we might not naturally think of as dudes we would be looking forward to seeing in September, like just a couple guys that caught some attention that we might need to kind of keep an eye out for once the season gets started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously the number one that's been talked about a bunch is Nolan Ray. As a running back, I went out and saw him when he was a senior there, going through some injuries in high school. But, you know, one of the fastest guys on the team, my vote for spring game MVP, 96 yards on the ground, including a 49-yard rush there in the spring game. So he's a guy who will kind of continue this. You know, Maryland's really hit on a lot of running backs here, to the point where they've got, you know, guys entering the portal, going elsewhere, and they still have, you know, more coming in. So it's good to see that panning out. You probably look at a guy like, you know, Wislowski, you know, he's kind of a depth guy. But I did like what I saw from him. You know, he's someone who could play, you know, more than just the kick returner, punt returner kind of role. And then I was really surprised when I was at the Ballou scrimmage at how much Braden Lee was getting some shine there as a true freshman. With how deep, you know, college football is and rosters and always, you know, trying to fill those starting spot. He's really fought for playing time already, and I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, definitely try and milk as many snaps in those four games as possible, similar to like they saw with Alex Moore last year at safety playing a bunch early. It's going to be difficult to try and contain that red shirt on Lee, especially if they aren't able to get another top corner out of the portal.
Yeah, I was going to say most of what we talked about so far has been the offense, and you're hearing on the defense that the front seven's really stacked. The secondary has some holes. Is that your takeaway?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like a lot of people have mentioned, it's, you know, Maryland's defensive and offensive lines, you know, they're night and day from what they were 10, 20 years ago. And just the size, the power, the speed, you know, Jordan Phillips is a kind of guy who, you know, Maryland doesn't usually get at this stage of his career. You know, he's got so many reps, you know, he's really built, you know, for Big Ten football, and that kind of trickles down from the guys behind him. You even saw with the interception return by Kiari James, you know, early enrollee freshman, you know, already making plays. So not all these guys will be able to see the field and get that experience, but, you know, it's definitely been nice to watch.
And of course, the special teams, huge commit today. Huge commit.
Hey, don't make fun of the punter. That's a big deal.
This is Big Ten football.
Yeah, I agree. I was kind of making fun of myself because I am excited about the punter, and I thought that it would be funny that I was excited about it. Bryce McPherson, punter, coming from Notre Dame, and he started there.
Like 46 yards a kick. I mean, that's pretty damn good for a punter.
Yeah, and 2 years of eligibility. So, you know, obviously Spangler was the senior last year. Brendan Segovia's kind of, you know, taken over a bit at the punting. But you even saw in the spring game, Jack Howells had to step in for the white team and punt it six times. So you definitely like having two guys there, you know, in case of an injury or if you want to platoon them like they were doing with Spangler and Pecorella there. But, 38 punts at Notre Dame, 45.1 average with a long of 59. He's right-footed. Segovia is left-footed, so you can platoon him, you know, like they did. But, yeah, definitely a solid addition.
That's right. And we got a comment from Mr. Mad Mike 0003. Brian Ferentz hire already paying dividends. That's right.
Hey, I was going a long way punting that ball, man.
That was fun. The reaction to them hiring him as an analyst, which is like one step up from an intern, is kind of funny. I mean, it's wild, guy, right? Obviously, you know, he's a big national name because of the offense. And the offense, you know, he was the OC at Iowa, and he struggled so bad his dad made it worse by, like any dad, refusing to fire his son, where the AD had to step in and fire him after a while. But he was their offensive line coach. He's been a coach in the NFL with the Packers. So get a guy like that as an analyst who's basically just support staff, catching things that somebody else might not catch or filling in the cracks here and there or giving you a lead on a recruit from somebody he knows from 20 years ago in Iowa or whatever. Those guys, I mean, that's a no-brainer. I understand, you know, people make a punchline out of it. But
well, Saban did that for years, right? That's how Locks rehabilitated himself, yeah. So
yeah, doing this coaching witness protection program thing, like, you know, if Mike can do kind of a, you know, lower key version of what Saban did, you know, picking up guys like Sumlin and, you know, guys who are a bit down and giving them a second chance, like that just builds him up and his reputation up as a coach and a guy who's, when he's looking for guys, when he has a need, it's going to be easier for him to fill those needs because other coaches are going to see that he's taking care of these other guys who've been a bit down on their luck. And he knows that, you know, he's a real one to put it that way. So there's no downside to this at all. Brian Ferentz is an excellent offensive line coach in his younger days too. Like, you know, it's like James Franklin, like everybody saw him as an offensive coordinator. It's like, get this fucking guy out of here. But, you know, he's a pretty good wide receiver coach. And obviously as a CEO of a program, he's damn near elite at this point. Right. So guys just have different skill sets that they're better at or worse at, and getting a guy like that in here to help again with all these offensive line program problems and being able to try and maybe go and find some offensive line talent that might be a little bit, you know, that lower down the recruiting totem pole than we're used to, or in areas we don't necessarily recruit very hard. I mean, if this dude's got a line to some corn-fed dudes from Iowa or Wisconsin or whatever, you can come in here as two stars and kill it, by all means, man. Pay that man his money.
Yeah, I'm all for that. So before we move on, Wes, overall impressions about spring, successful spring? No, well, there was one kind of injury, right?
Yeah, yeah. It looked like at the Blue scrimmage, LaVon Johnson went down and needed a cast and everything, but it seems to be okay. So I guess, you know, time will tell. Obviously, I would say it was a successful spring. Locks talked about, you know, you get away with minimal injuries. Kind of reset here. He said they've got this month of May to kind of, you know, relax and do some informal stuff, coming back for workouts in June. So it'll be interesting to see how everything pans out after that. But I would definitely say things are still trending in the right direction, and there's no need to, you know, start panicking, you know, for the fall yet.
So for both of you, is it like with the portal being what it is and everything that's, you know, the schedule's changing, or is May still kind of like the old school evaluation period where you'll have all these, you know, recruit, you know, events and things like that 24/7, and everybody else will run all their stuff on these weekends, and you're really trying to kind of figure out exactly who you're going to be pushing for in terms of recruiting, and then once June starts, you start your, you know, your own camp schedule. July, give your coaches off to kind of, you know, go on vacation and whatnot, and then you hit it hard in August. Is that still generally the schedule now?
Yeah, I don't think it's changed. I think it's still the same. So just like every year, we'll see kind of a slow trickle of recruiting action, and then bam, June comes, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this is the eighth commit in 5 days. You know, it happens every single summer. So. That's the
point. And while we're on that, why don't we go right into Malik Washington? Where are we at there? When's that visit coming up?
I think they're looking good. They still haven't. I don't think there's been much confidence lost over there. There was some concern about Penn State being a threat once they lost out on Matt Zollers, in-state kid who picked Missouri. I don't think they've gained any.
That's
traction.
Hilarious, by the way.
Yeah. NIL is a whole different ballgame. So I think they're still clearly the leaders for Malik Washington. I know they'd like to get it done sooner rather than later. I think the final of his four visits, he has Central Florida, Syracuse, and I believe Virginia Tech. I think Maryland is the last one.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Like toward the end of June, so I'm sure that they have that circled as getting him wrapped up in late June if they can.
Did he already go on the Virginia Tech visit, or is that still upcoming?
I don't think he's taken an official there.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe an unofficial.
Yeah, I think he went down there for the spring game, and then he came up for Maryland spring game. He commented that the Bud Coombs commitment today was intriguing. So you know, it's definitely, it doesn't hurt to keep, you know, pulling in some local guys even before you get a guy like him.
Hat tip to Matt Swope on that one.
Sure, that didn't hurt. Yeah, for anybody who missed it. Bud Coombs, a running back from Dematha, who's also a star baseball player, committed to Maryland on Wednesday. Long expected. You know, we'd had him crystal ball to Maryland for about a month. Good get. I think he's number right around 54 running back in the country, three-star kid, and plans to play both sports in college, which, as we know, is very rare, but maybe, you know, maybe he can do a Dante Trader except with baseball.
Hey, just for the record, if 24/7 is to be believed, Malik Washington took his official visit to Virginia Tech on April 12th. So he's done with them, and that's the other team that Doan and others have said might be the competition. So I'm going to go ahead and give the famed Paul Douglas crystal ball for Malik Washington to University of Maryland by July 4th with a confidence level of 13, because we're not losing that kid to UCF or Syracuse.
13 out of?
10.
Okay. I was going to say like 27.
So let it be written, so let it be done.
Out of 1,000.
Yes. Well, hopefully he can be – does he have any charismatic pool like Pied Piper stuff? Is he going to be able to
– Yeah, he's that dude.
They say he does. They say – I asked – obviously, locally, a lot of guys know him, including a couple of his teammates. Maryland's also recruiting. But they told me that even some guys from – you know, I've heard some guys from out of state are calling over, like, what's the deal? Is he going to come to Maryland? So he's well-known, and I think there's a good chance that once he gets out on this camp circuit this summer, his rating could rise.
Okay. Well, we got a question that is a perfect – tool to use to switch from football to basketball, and it's a question.
I can't imagine what that is.
Everybody cares. Everybody's talking about. So we're going to pop it up here. Whatever this is, Joyce, Nyan, Shara McCoury YouTube channel. You get your little plug there. Is Chaz Lanier coming to Maryland?
You know, I was watching True Lies earlier, and. No, I
hopefully not with your son. If you're watching that
screen,
scene,
you're supposed to pop up the screenshot, Lawrence.
Of? I forget. What screenshot?
The 90s movie, the
hoodie. Oh, well, somebody asked us this random question for you all that has nothing to do with football. Mm. Who do you prefer, who, Alien or Predator?
See, that's the 80s, though. That's different. That is nothing. There's no coding in there about this particular recruit.
Hey, I already did it, Jeff. I did it at the beginning of the show.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
How did I miss that?
You weren't listening to the True Lies?
I was listening. I didn't see you pop it up there. I was too busy.
I didn't pop up a thing. I just brought it.
Oh, I know you dropped a reference.
Yes.
Anyways, I mean, it's too early to say. They're definitely very much in the mix, far more so than most people, I think, thought. Everybody just – Twitter collectively decided he was going to go to Tennessee since he's from Tennessee. But I think they got as good a shot as anybody, and just going to have to be patient because he still has his name in the NBA draft, hasn't taken any visits yet. So it's going to be one of those that keeps you clicking on the site, or, I mean, keeps you on the edge of your seat. For the next, who knows how long, we'll see. I mean, you never know. Could guys like him, usually who aren't as well known or come from smaller name schools, usually they tend to withdraw from the draft a little earlier after they get their name out. So that could happen before the deadline, because the deadline is like 6 weeks, I think, away, something like that, to pull out of the draft. So, but yeah, they're very much in the mix with Lanier.
This is a weird one, man. I get a little deja vu about it because it feels like so many times where Maryland has had what feels like a pretty good returning roster, and they just need that one extra piece to put them over the top to make them much more, I guess, in the conversation of the elite programs and you know, the kind of top 15 discussion. I don't know if Maryland's quite there, even if Lanier commits them, but they, you can make the argument. And it just feels like every time Maryland's needed that type of kid, they just never quite get him. So I understand the pessimism a little bit.
Yeah, it feels like Maryland tees, 100% Maryland tees. But.
And you got numbers at guards. I mean, you're talking about, you know, but it, I am assuming that Rodney Rice is going to be a playable Big Ten player. I don't know whether he's going to play 35 minutes and be all, all conference or played 15 minutes and put in 6 and 3, but he's going to be a guy who's going to be in a rotation. So you're talking about Gillespie, Rice, Miguel, and DHS. So it's getting pretty crowded already for a guy with NBA ambitions to come in. I guess it kind of depends on whether he's the type of guy who's like, you know what, I'm going to be good enough to beat all these dudes out. And, you know, or a guy who's just like, I just want to be featured, you know, because I think that it might be that whatever his disposition is kind of determines whether he wants to come here or to a Tennessee, where even though they've got a much better team off of last season, I think they've got a little more roster room for a guy to kind of come in and, you know, get 30 minutes right off the top.
Yeah, also, I mean, I think for him, he probably won't be worried about it that much. He, guys like him are confident. That's the other guy's problem. They're going to get less time than me once it comes down to it. Crunch time. We need to win. We need buckets. So probably not worried about that too much, although obviously it might be a little more appealing if you had not quite as much depth. But the good thing is he has some relationships there. He's close with Jacoby Gillespie. You know, they've talked about playing together. Reported, I'll give away a little bit for subscribers, that he's been in contact. He's talked to Derek Queen also. So, you know, I think Maryland is definitely appealing for him, assuming he pulls out of the draft. And it would be pretty surprising if it wasn't a Maryland-Tennessee affair.
And then the NIL, Maryland's already brought in some big names. They're obviously bringing Juju back and Derek Queen coming in as the freshman. How much more do they have left in the tank for that?
I think they're funded well enough to get it done. Where I don't think it's going to be a huge – unless somebody – same caveat as always, Kansas or whoever comes with $1 million, then it's not happening. But otherwise, I think that they're in pretty good shape.
It certainly has to make you feel pretty good looking at the amount of guys they brought in the portal, as well as keeping Julian, as well as putting together a big package for Queen, that they even feel like they've got the kind of money they can even play ball on a kid who's still in the NBA draft right now. I mean, it feels like, at least from the NIL situation, it's night and day, even from last year, let alone 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, it's not even close. Like I've said before, I think they're 3 or 4 times what they had last year, budget-wise. So, you know, there's guys coming in this year who are getting significantly more than Jameer Young was getting as an established Big Ten player. Some of that is Maryland boosting its funding, and some of that is just the market. It's gone crazy this year. Guys everywhere are getting 2 times what they were getting a year ago. So we shall see. I think it's going to require a little bit of patience, though, before we know what he's going to do.
Besides him, anyone else that's a possible, still a transfer target for next season?
Yeah, there's another kid named Alex Hemingway from Clemson, Indiana native, 3-point specialist. Averaged about 15 minutes a game in his career so far. Really shoots the three well. Has been above 40% in 4 out of 5 seasons. The other season he was like 38. Obviously, the question anytime you see that is, okay, this guy shot 40%. How's he only playing 15 minutes? So can he keep that up? Although maybe you don't need more than 15 minutes from a guy like that if you take him. Probably depends to some extent if they're able to find a way to clear another scholarship up. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But because I don't think you're going to spend that scholarship without knowing what Chaz Lanier is going to do. But Indiana's also involved. That's home for him. So, you know, I could see him ending up there. But he's the only other name that's really floating around right now for Maryland.
And then how about 2025 recruiting? How's that going?
Yeah, they're just starting to kind of turn the page to that now that they've wrapped up most of their portal work. Grassroots AAU season is kicking in. So in a couple of weeks, they'll be all over the recruiting trail following these guys all around the country. You know, I think the guy to keep the closest tabs on has got to be Tyler Jackson, the point guard from Baltimore, is very close friends with Derek Queen. You know, he's a guy, I haven't made a crystal ball pick yet, but it's possible. I think he's ranked in the 30s right now, borderline 5-star kind of guy. And then it's the same names, obviously, Cam Ward, Kaden Lewis, a bunch of those guys, same names we've been talking about, Mallory, and then some more will pop up inevitably once the AAU season gets out and they see guys that they like. So the whole thing, as I've said before, has been pushed back by the portal, usually by now in the past, either some of these high school guys committing or setting visits or knowing who the favorite is. And now that coaches just pay them basically no attention until May because of the portal, it's later in the cycle that we get a feel for who might be going where.
So just to confirm, the portal is closing for football and basketball on the first.
Correct.
Okay. So basically, if you're in basketball and you're waiting for Lanier, there's nobody else out there who's not already available and out there to be looked at.
I'm sure they always have. There's always that little list of backup options or a few guys that they have a connection to or whatever in case something falls through. But there's no, as far as I know, there's no primary targets right now. Otherwise,
there are highly ranked players in the portal that haven't committed yet. You can see that. I was looking at there's the transfer portal rankings on 24/7 Sports, and I was looking at that. So there are players.
Yeah, there's no deadline for the portal. There's no deadline to transfer somewhere. It's just a deadline, obviously, to jump into the portal. There's no deadline for jumping out of it. So
the other thing that I was looking at on the basketball recruiting search, you can look at all the targets by year. And in 2025, there's 12 guys listed as warm. 10 of them are in the top 100 for 2025 for Maryland. Has that ever happened? 10 top 100 guys. Is that because of NIL? Like, what's going on? Like, that's kind of,
I would guess it's in part, at least, because this is the first class that has really come up through high school with Willard at Maryland. You know, he's still relatively new. So other guys in past years, they were recruited maybe by Turgeon, maybe not, definitely by other schools. So some of that is probably these guys were young and they've, you know, it's the first group that's been recruited since early in their careers by this staff. And they're doing a good job. And there's a lot of talent locally, as always, as we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a little while still because of what I mentioned with the portal and everything before we know, like, this guy is the A1, and it'll be surprising if he doesn't come to Maryland. But they do have a lot of really good options. I don't know how they do the math. Imagine being a coach and trying to guess who's leaving next year and if you're going to need a guy out of the portal, how many scholarships to save, that sort of thing. I don't even know how they do that, but it'll be interesting to see how many guys they take.
It kind of reminds me, they put out the schedule so you know whoever Maryland's playing out next year. And I'm like, how the hell do you know which ones are good and which ones are bad? It's like, it's such a crapshoot now. The teams are changing so much. Half the team turnover, 75% of the teams. You don't know which ones are going to be good and which ones are going to be bad. It's like, so high. Like,
well, imagine, I mean, look at high school recruiting. How many high school kids do you even want to take now? Like, if you know that you've got an NIL budget where you can go out and get three starter quality guys in the portal every year, do you even want a four-man freshman class anymore? Or are you just trying to take one or two that you feel like might be building blocks and just kind of go from there? Yeah, I mean, or do you take the three or four and then assume that you're going to lose one or two somewhere along the way because they're unhappy or, you know, they just don't, you know, aren't good enough or what have you, and then kind of go from there. Like, I have no idea how you do that math because it's wild. I mean, it's just a total crapshoot.
Yeah. Well, anything else for basketball? I think we kind of beat that horse. I do have a fill in the blank for you guys. Wes has been with us the whole show. Normally when we have a guest, we end with fill in the blank, but he's been here the whole time. So I'm going to do fill in the blank with you guys. And I've got two for each of you. I don't have a non-revenue report for you guys. I did not hook up with Tony Wheeler. I know Paul.
Wheels.
Yeah. I didn't hook up with him in time. It's my fault. It's not his fault. The lacrosse team plays Penn State tomorrow night in the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament. I know that. The baseball team has won like three in a row, and they're probably not quite a postseason berth team unless they finish strong. Women's lacrosse lost to Rutgers in the Big Ten tournament. That's all I got.
It's not bad off the top. Yeah.
I saw on like Instagram or something, though, the softball team's won a few games recently too. They're doing better. Anyway, okay. Someone's asking, how's the soccer team going to be this fall, actually? Chris L. Any idea, Paul? I have no idea.
Are they going to not.
Sasha brought in a bunch of like international MLS Academy kind of players. Some questions as to how those guys are going to pan out. You know, it's different. You know, these guys can go professional younger with MLS Next Pro and all these other options now. So it's flipping to where they're kind of recruiting the, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid from Germany to come to the U.S. kind of deal. So it's going to be interesting to see how he's able to flip these recruits and pan them out, but they're definitely going to have to be better than they were next year.
Wes with the soccer scoop. There we go. Yeah, you follow the soccer team, Wes?
Yeah, Man City.
Okay. Oh, I mean, Man City.
When did you become a Man City fan?
2012, I played FIFA. Joe Hart was my favorite player. I didn't even know what was happening.
You mean Taylor Twelman's twin? Right,
fair enough.
Taylor Twelman's twin. To turn it back to Maryland soccer.
Yeah.
You follow Maryland soccer. Did you go to the games? Were you part of, what do they call it, the crew, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You were in the crew? That's cool. All right.
As long as you were City fan before they got taken over by the, you know, emir of whatever.
Technically a little after, but I had no idea.
Okay. If Joe Hart was the reason you became a Man City fan, that's a whole other complex I don't even want to get into.
And everybody's like, okay, who the hell is Joe Hart?
That's right. Fine.
Yeah.
He's the one. Everybody, you mean me, right?
Isn't he the one that Dempsey's shot in the World Cup, like tripped over?
No, that was Robert Green, but an English keeper with a famous whoopsie in a big match. Yes,
that's I thought it was Joe Hart. Okay, all right. Anyway, okay, let's finish.
Hey, hold on. One more question. One more question from Miss Joyce, who's been so nice of us to chat.
Okay, let's pop her up there, Miss Joyce.
What about Kapari? Like, I know the staff is really in love with him as a recruit coming out of New Zealand.
Yeah.
It seemed like he put a little bit together. I'm not sure about the fit more than his talent. I think just he doesn't really add a lot more than you're not already getting from Julian and Queen, I think, is my biggest issue. But he certainly looks like a guy who can play for a couple of years.
He's got some talent. He was top 70 recruit coming out of high school. That doesn't guarantee you anything, but there's a reason. He's 6'9", moves really well. You know, he has not shot the ball well in his career. He knows that. Reported recently that he's going to be training with Chris Matthews, who's better known as Lethal Shooter. He's the famed NBA shooting coach, so he'll be trying to help him out with that, obviously, because you need to have some sort of face-up presence in the front court. We saw this year that Geronimo's not that guy. Julian Reese and Derek Queen obviously aren't proven at all as perimeter shooters. But, you know, I think they think he can give them something, whether it's in 10 minutes a game or whatever it might be. It's really tough to sell coming to Maryland to front court guys right now because they all see Queen and Reese there. They all know that they're probably not going to start. Everybody wants to start. So sometimes you got to take a guy and with some warts and hope that it's a fit.
Think he could be good? Also, I still like Geronimo. Everybody was kind of out on him last year a little bit. I think he's going to be a good part of the rotation.
As long as he's slotted into the right role, right? As long as he's slotted in as that energy guy who's going to play defense, get some dunks off the bench as opposed to a starter who's going to be camped out in the corner shooting threes. We saw how that worked out. I don't know how many – there's so many questions because we don't know how much Queen and Reese are going to play together and all those sort of things. How many three-guard lineups they're going to play, which if they get Chaz Lanier.
A lot.
Nonstop. three or four guard maybe lineups at times. So So, yeah, it's, you know, the front court is interesting. Braden Pierce, the 7-footer redshirted last year, can really shoot it a lot better than the other big men they have. And then going back to Gapare, you know, like he looked last year, Matty Traore, they liked him for his potential. I couldn't have ever seen him scoring 20 points in a game, no matter what the circumstances were, you know, because he just wasn't at that point as a player. Gapare, you know, he had his ups and downs at Georgia Tech, but he had 20 points, I think, against Penn State, maybe it was. He had double digits in 4 or 5 ACC games. So he's proven that he's capable of playing at this level, but he has to prove he's capable of consistently playing at a high level at this level.
There you go, Joyce. All right. We will end the show with fill in the blank. And normally it's rapid fire when we have a guest, but since it's not a guest, you guys can expound upon it if you'd like to. We'll start with Jeff. The players in the 2025 men's basketball class will be?
Well, how many are we thinking there's going to be? That's the problem. There's no way to know. I'll say,
pick a round number at this point, right?
I'll just pick 2 for now because we don't know how many they're going to take. They probably don't have many to. I'll say Tyler Jackson, already explained earlier, close to Derek Queen. They need a guard in that class. And then Cam Ward is top priority. They're going all out for him. They have been for a long time. Everybody describes him as a hometown DMV kind of guy. So those would be the 2. If you made me pick right now, those would be the 2.
I'd take that.
Cam right, Ward feels like the musket of that class.
Wes. The 2025 football recruiting class final ranking will be?
Probably 30 to 35.
I was hoping you'd take better than that.
I think you'll take that all day if you're Maryland.
It's not bad. They're off to a pretty good start. So,
here's the question, Larry. When's the last time they were higher than 30? Higher as in like 20?
Well, Loxley, they were 18 like in his second year, right? Something like that. And then every other year, they're down in the 40s, and then he has his signing day bonanza, and they finish in the 30s. So you're saying about the same as usual, I guess.
Yeah. Larry, I have a quick project for you and your spreadsheets. Go okay. Look at that class and see how many of the, like, I don't know, top 10 kids in that class made it through.
I know it's
like
bad.
3 years.
Almost
or 4 years.
None, yeah.
I would bet pretty much none of them because yep. – If Maryland is getting kids of those kind of rankings, there's a reason they came to Maryland and not somewhere else.
Paul, that's so depressing. Don't say that.
I'm a grizzled old veteran when it comes to this stuff now. Like I've seen it and
I could feel that comment hurting Larry's feelings through the internet.
Trust me, nobody loves the PR from that stuff more than I do, or Mike Loxley does, I imagine, but like I'm much more interested, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, how many of those kids are still here and actually playing football?
Not always. Not always. Some of those 4 stars pan out. All right. Paul, the leader of next year's basketball team will be?
That's an interesting question. Juju's not like a, you know, vocal kind of guy.
Right.
I'm curious what Gillespie can bring. He seems like a bit of a personality, you know, certainly a guy who succeeded in the Missouri Valley. With the translation for guys like that is pretty good. I don't know if he's going to walk in and be Jameer Young, but I think he's going to be pretty good, and I think he's going to be a good leader. I think if DHS plays himself into the lineup into enough minutes because he's taken that next step, feels like he could be a leader too. But those would be the 2 candidates that pop off the top of my head.
All right, Jeff, we kind of touched on this, but we'll get a little more specific. To start the 2024-25 season, the basketball team will be ranked.
Well, I think without Lanier, you're probably in the 25-ish range. With him, you could be near the top 10, so I'll split the difference. I'll say like 19.
All right. I would take that, absolutely. Okay, Wes, the regular season record for the football team next season will be?
I'm probably going to go 8 wins. I'm kind of bullish on it. I think the win total right now is around 7.5 over under. I think they find a way to get over with a slightly easier schedule than they usually would probably have.
Wow. I am not there. I'm too worried about that.
We're old souls, man. We've seen way too much of this with quarterback issues.
Yeah, they only play one out of Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan.
Yes, but yes, they also play Oregon.
In Eugene. That's gonna be awesome.
That's gonna be tough, but
it's not quite, you're right, it's not quite the same. And yeah. I feel like Maryland, just from a program football style, matches up better against some of those Pac-10 teams than they do against those kind of grinded out meat grinder Michigans and Ohio States of the world. I mean, obviously Ohio State and Michigan have athletes too, but like their line play is second to none. And it makes you wonder whether just they might be better, you know, USC's and the UCLA's and the Oregon's might be a slightly better matchup for Maryland than they would be against other schools.
They might beat you a lot of time, but they're not going to bludgeon you to death as much.
Right. That's the thought. And then, yeah. You know, I think just from Wes's comment, I mean, you can't say this enough how important it is for Maryland to be able to show that they can put up another 7 or 8 without Leah. That feels like if there's one thing that's kind of keeping from like, give Mike a lifetime contract, it's can you do it without Leah quarterback? Can you find a way to turn Billy into a guy who can win those games? Or can MJ come in and be that guy for the next 2 or 3 years? That's kind of the whole story of the Maryland football program for me. Like if you can go and you can say, look, we've set the floor from, you know, when I got here, it was 2, 3, 4, 5 wins a year. Now it's 6, 7, or 8. Like that is a massive statement. And being able to pull that off in the Big Ten conference in a way that we've never done in our history. I mean, you can't speak to how important this season is to being able to kind of say, okay, we are resetting this floor. Come join the party before we've left because, you know, we're doing something big here. Mike Lox isn't just talking about it anymore. He's actually out there doing it. And that matters so much.
You offer me 7 and 5. I'm taking it. But Wes.
Oh, yeah. I'm always taking 7 and 5. Shit.
Calling. I might, if you ask me to predict, I might say 6. But Wes calling for 8. I love it. God, I hope that is correct. Wes. Guaranteed at least 8 wins for Maryland this year. And our boy in the chat, Antoine Cuff, he outdid Wes. Double digits.
Man,
no, print the shirts. 10-2.
Print the shirts.
10-2. All right, Paul. The average attendance for the football team last year was 40,314, a 26.24% improvement from 2022. Next year's attendance will be...
I don't know. I got to pull up the home schedule because it's not because of Maryland fans. It's going to be
you get USC at home. That's going to be the one that kind of brings in the most, I think.
I don't know whether that's a huge pull. I mean, maybe.
I think it is. I mean, that's one of those national
the
names.
Novelty that of it too.
Get starry eyed about. I think so. Even though they haven't been the old USC lately, I still feel like it's one of those national brands that attracts attention.
That's probably right. I mean, but they certainly probably I imagine they don't have a huge alumni base on the East Coast, so you're not getting that kind of you're not getting locals to come out. So I don't know. Maybe I imagine Larry. I'll put it this way: I think it'll be the same. I think you'll probably get a few more Maryland butts in the seats than you did last year, but you won't have those sellouts from having, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and all those guys here. Twice a year, 2 or 3 times a year, I guess.
Well, that would be an improvement, actually, if you have the same amount, but it's a higher percentage of Maryland people. That's
yes. No, I think there will be more. I'm sure season ticket sales are up for that and will be 1,000 or 2 higher than they were last year. I'm sure of that. But just when you're talking about overall attendance, I mean, away fans do matter whether we like it or not. It's just the way things are here.
When they're 6-0, USC comes to town, and
game
is sold out.
Game day.
They beat USC to go to 7-0. It's game on after that. It is game on
Yes, this. If Maryland is 7-0 after beating USC at home, it is definitely game one. Bold prediction, Lawrence France. Thank you.
It is game one. All right, well, that's how you get to 8.
It's kind of funny because
if they don't get to 8 after going 7-0 beating USC, then there will be a problem.
The problem is after USC, it's at Minnesota, at Oregon, home against Rutgers, which you would think is number 8, but then home against Iowa at Penn State. So there's not too many opportunities.
We're not losing to PJ Flex bum ass. I don't care. That's not happening. Write that down.
Boney Maroney, yes. Bless my heart. Thank you very much.
Look, that's why Larry's here, man. He's got to keep things on the up and up. That's good.
I'm not the one who said 8 wins. And I'm not the one who said 10 wins, by the way. Also, by the way, I just did say I might predict 6 wins. So I'm in my realistic
That's where your 6 comes from the first half of the season. Yeah, and after that,
the analytical mind, if I'm doing my percentages, I'm like, oh, it's 6 wins. But my the fan of me says, all right, let's go.
Well, the odd makers put it at 6.5, was it, or 7.5?
They're at 7?
No, it's not 7.
It's 6.5. I thought it was 7.5. I thought so.
There's no way they're putting us
at 7. I think we wrote something.
Yes, it is.
Without a quarterback,
as of March, FanDuel has it at 7.5.
Yes, I told you.
They're bullish.
I might take the under.
I know. 7.5. I mean,
I got to see how much money's in my FanDuel.
That's probably one of those where like the under has like -195 next to it, you know,
-300. Yeah, I mean, hell, that's talk about an emotional hedge bet. I mean, that's just built for one right there. Throw a couple hundy on the under, and you know, if you're wrong, then great. Pick which bowl game we get to go to again.
All right. Good show, guys. Thank you, Wes, for joining and sticking with us for the whole show so we could do our spring football recap and suffering through basketball talk. I'm bored by it, too. I know. I hate
it. Three and a half hours left until the portal closes. So
yes,
plenty of time for drama.
Have you gotten any texts? I know you should look down a few times. I've seen you look down.
I'm setting up an interview, but no, like still nothing on football. I wonder if there'll be a few of the guys who have entered it, but it hasn't come out yet. But that's hard to imagine because there's a lot of media outlets that have direct access to the portal. That's how they're breaking the news. And so it's very strange because I would have thought maybe you see 5 to 7 guys who aren't probably going to play that much leave. So it's very unusual.
Thought we might see a quarterback too. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, a 3-man competition with, you know, what, 6 guys on scholarship at quarterback right now?
Like all three of them legitimately, from what I've gathered, believe that they're going to win the job.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's interesting. Could be worse.
Yeah. Could be worse. All right. Good show, guys. Thank you, everybody, for joining live. Thank you, everybody, for listening back later, whenever that is. Please do us a favor. Give us a like. Subscribe to our channel. All of that stuff. It really helps us out. We will. I don't know when we're going to see you guys again. If there's some big recruits, maybe we'll have a show. But it is the off season, so maybe 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know. We'll make it widely known to everybody.
Keep an eye out on the socials, people.
Keep an eye out. This is IMS Radio.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount+.